just standing there. And I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. I kissed you then, and then once again.
Healing with Dr. Daniels. It is Sunday, April 14th, 2019, and have we got a show for you. Yep. Today's topic is over-the-counter drug that increases stroke risk. Yep, you heard that right. The medical industrial complex has got you taking aspirin to reduce your stroke risk. They've got you lowering your cholesterol to reduce your stroke risk. They've got you taking blood pressure medications to reduce your stroke risk. And, of course, the FDA, in its wisdom, has approved an over-the-counter drug that increases stroke risk. I tell you, you can't make this stuff up. So what we're going to take a look at today is a very popular over-the-counter drug that is quietly creating a tremendous amount of misery, sickness, and illness. And I'll just tell you right off the bat what drug that is. It is acetaminophen. Yeah, big day, acetaminophen. You listeners might also know that as Tylenol. Yeah, as Tylenol. You might know it also as Panadol. Those are two popular names. And this is amazing. And it's not that there's anything wrong with this. I really don't see anything wrong with this. The only issue, if one would have an issue, is there's a lot of misinformation, misunderstanding. I think to complain that a certain drug is over the counter or that it's available, it's like complaining that there's a cliff you might fall off of. Well, you know, if you know what the cliff is, you say, oh, you know, we just won't walk that way, we'll walk the other way. And so it's just a matter of if you decide that this is not the way you want to end your life, then you might want to use other drugs or other solutions. So let's take a look. Let's see what is in your doctor's mailbox. you know, it's to me really amazing that people say, "Oh, well, you know, we don't know, we didn't know, more research is needed." No. The research is out there. The medical industrial complex itself is doing the research. It's almost like they're tracking, this keeping score. How many people are they harming? How many more can they harm next week? So it's almost like a pinball game for those of you who are older, a football game for those of you who are not so old, or a video game for those of you who are younger. As in any of those three scenarios, you're trying to maximize your score. And so, of course, the score you maximize is the score you keep track of. So the medical industrial complex does not measure cures. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. But the doctors don't get emails saying, "Hey, we cured this. Hey, we fixed that." No. They get constant, just a blood avalanche of emails explaining how many more people are being harmed by medical care. And they're given a pat on the back, like, "You know what? You guys do the best you can. Keep working." And so you almost have to wonder, you know, what is it they're really doing here? As I say, you measure what you achieve what you measure. In other words, if you're measuring something, then that's what you're going to maximize. All right. So here's what they say. Headline: acetaminophen tied to stroke risk in older adults with diabetes. Yep. Use of acetaminophen is associated with an increased risk of stroke among elderly nursing home residents with diabetes, the author of a new study report. Now, make no mistake, the study was designed, okay, it was designed to look at people who are older, who are in nursing home, and who had diabetes. However, it is difficult to imagine that something harmful even to this population would be helpful to the rest of the population. But I think it's reasonable to extrapolate. In other words, it's reasonable to accept this information as applicable to people of other ages. All right. And the secondary analysis of data, what does that mean? That means that data was collected for a purpose. We don't know what purpose. And then that data was analyzed for the purpose of this study. So the data was not primarily gathered for this study, but since the data was sitting there, somebody with time on their hands said, "Hey, let's take a look at this data. Let's see what else we can find here." And so that's the way this particular study was done, and that's the way more and more studies are being done. It occurred to me when I was in medical practice that as I was seeing patients, as I was writing chart notes, I'm like, "Holy cow, I'm gathering a lot of information here." I mean, if I had a way to go through this information and really analyze which patients were getting what results, and I could do a much better job. And so actually I set aside time every year, a couple of days, to do this, to pull all the charts with people with a certain diagnosis, review all the charts and see if I could find a pattern and improve what I was doing. And so now with electronic medical records, with centralized medical records, this type of activity is being engaged in by organizations. So organizations are doing this. Now you say, "Oh, wow, that's great." Maybe, maybe not. But they have a bias. And they have a reason for looking for the information they're looking for. In my particular case, my reason was I want to know how I could improve or simplify or streamline the therapy for people of certain, you know, with certain diagnoses. All right, so these people, for some reason which we don't know, decided to take a second look at this pool of data of 5,000 adults, which is a good number. And these are living in homes in southwestern France. Homes is what they use for nursing homes. The risk of death and stroke outcomes were similar, among patients who did and those who did not use Tylenol, except with diabetes. So in other words, if they did not have diabetes, there did not seem to be any influence here. But when they had diabetes, there was a problem. And that subgroup, Tylenol, or acetaminophen, or Panadol, use was associated with a stroke risk more than 3 times higher than in non-users. Holy cow. So given the effects of diabetes on stroke function, or cardiovascular function, that means heart and blood vessels, plus the effect of Tylenol or acetaminophen on prostaglandin synthesis and other inflammatory mechanisms, the findings suggest that acetaminophen could become a trigger factor for strokes. Could become? Maybe it already is. I mean, if it triples the frequency of stroke, like, holy cow. Now, notice here that they're postulating prostaglandin synthesis, inflammatory mechanisms. Let me digress here for a moment to say it's all a bunch of BS. You just take that, put it in the toilet, and flush it. So we're going to give you a more simple, straightforward model to understand this. Right? And why acetaminophen might trigger strokes. Okay, the fact that the patients were elderly also meant they had more time to develop cardio risk factors. Okay, so they're elderly means they had more time to develop cardio risk factors, whatever those might be. And acetaminophen in such circumstances might become a triggering factor that unbalances a precarious equilibrium. This is an important thing to get a grip on. So if you are healthy, let's say, and your health is in a delicate balance, acetaminophen, aka Tylenol, which by the way is a ingredient in Actifed, Alka-Seltzer, Anacin, Benadryl, Cipacol, Contac, Florecedin, Dayquil, and even more. Oh, Jesus Christ. Tristan, Dimetapp, Robitussin, Panadol, as we mentioned, Midol, Goodies, Formula 44, Feverol, Excedrin, and so on. Okay, so it's in a lot of places. And basically, this can take you from healthy to not healthy, in this case, stroke. At least one outside expert concurred, that means agreed, with the recommendation for caution. That means be careful, but use it anyway. All right. The findings may be a signal that could lead to other research, but I would not use them to guide clinical practice. Like, no, don't stop using acetaminophen. Please. This is a secondary analysis of data collected for another purpose, said Hansen. That's actually redundant. So secondary analysis of data means it was collected for another purpose, as we said earlier. Who's a professor of the Division of Geriatric Medicine, that means they study old people, at University of North Carolina School of Medicine. That's the United States. The study was done in France, just by the way. I admire these authors for making use of this data. Exactly. You have to understand, they admire these authors for sticking their neck out and doing a study that might criticize a very popular drug. That's what this doctor's admiring. But the findings must be placed in the context of all the other data showing that acetaminophen is safe. We're going to take a look at that data in a minute. Other options do exist for controlling pain in this patient population. She recommended exercise. Exercise for a nursing home patient? And physical therapy for managing musculoskeletal pain, as well as the use of padding and the careful repositioning of patients who are less ambulatory. Hot and cold pads and topical pain medications also can be sources of non-dangerous, non-harmful pain relief. Notice, she did not recommend another pain pill. She did not recommend another class of painkillers. This is an important observation because, and I will get to later, Tylenol is considered the absolute safest pain medicine on the market. Yes, you heard that, the absolute safest. And Gerard urged clinicians to aim for treating specific types of pain and to assess the patient's kidney and liver capacities before prescribing pain medication. Why would you say that? What's this got to do with renal and hepatic? Renal is kidney, hepatic is liver. Because acetaminophen is known to be toxic to the liver, poisonous to the liver. That's Tylenol. Okay, study design findings. This is interesting. Study consisted of a secondary analysis of data, which they said 3 times before. Multi-center, non-randomized, controlled trial designed to improve quality indicators related to medical problems. So it's not random. In other words, randomly pick this person, that person, the other person. What they did was they use what I call the big data approach. They analyze all the data. And so the gold standard for research in the United States is the randomized control, placebo-controlled double-blind study. Although it's the gold standard, it has a tremendous amount of limitations. I mean, like, really serious limitations, which I've covered in other radio shows. But when you take the big data approach, which is to take a set of data and analyze every single data point, you actually get much more powerful information, which I believe has a much greater predictive value. Just my observation and experience. And the trial was controlled to improve, designed to improve quality of care, included a 6-month intervention period, followed by 18-month follow-up. Information about the patients was gathered from questionnaires answered by appropriate staff members at the participating facilities. Right. Because these nursing home patients were, in many cases, suffering from things like dementia and or had limited capacity to complete forms, for sure. Okay, so the study population included 5,429 individuals living in 175 nursing homes, mean age of 86.1 years. Of those patients, 41% used acetaminophen. And a daily average dose of 2 grams, that's a 500 milligram tablet, it took at least 4. So for users of acetaminophen, rates of hypertension and peripheral vascular disease were higher than for non-users, but rates of dementia were less. Interesting. The primary, so what you have to ask yourself is, was the distribution of illness related to the Tylenol use? In other words, because they took Tylenol, was that why the disease was more in the blood vessels? Or, I'm sorry. Yeah. In blood vessels than in the brain? Or more in the blood vessels outside of the brain, because the one major cause of dementia is a disease of the blood vessels in the brain. So the people who used acetaminophen or Tylenol or Panadol, which are all this different names for the same thing, had disease in the blood vessels of their arms, legs, and internal organs, just by the way, but not or less so of the brain. So the primary study outcome was death. They use the word mortality. It's a nicer word, sounds scientific. It kind of removes the reality of just like people died during the follow-up period. During that time, there were 667 deaths among users of acetaminophen for a mortality of 22 per 100 person years. Call it 22%. There were 940 deaths among people who did not use acetaminophen, 22.6 per 100 person years. So the was not substantially different. Well, slightly less. So 22.34 versus 22.16. So stroke and heart attack during follow-up were the secondary outcomes. So after excluding patients who died, I like it when they do that. So if you're dead, we can't count you. All right, so people died, so we didn't count them. Okay. So, including 34 among patients who used acetaminophen and 43 among those who did not. Similarly, strokes occurred in 3,000 patients, including 60 among acetaminophen users and 73 among non-users. But because the study was not randomized, the office also calculated propensity scores to account for potentially confounding factors for each outcome they explain. So this technique allows us to approach a randomized trial in terms of bias. And the bias would be the pre-existing condition. And so, although the death rates in both groups appear to be similar, users and non-users, what they did then is they separated by disease. So people with this disease, that disease, other disease, was there a bias in terms of Tylenol use? And so the pattern of findings was similar in the propensity matched population, that means pre-existing condition matched population, with no statistically important difference between Tylenol users and non-users. in primary and secondary outcomes, with one exception. Acetaminophen was associated with an increased risk of stroke among people with diabetes, but not in persons who did not have diabetes. And it's what they said, basically a threefold risk, holy cow. And the confidence interval was anywhere from 1.25% more to 8 times as much, so really, but not in persons without diabetes. So, and of course, their conclusion is acetamin is still a safe choice. For first-line pain management in frail elderly patients, the authors conclude, however, as this segment of the population increases, studies need to focus on the safety of the drugs these frail older adults commonly use to better our practice. All right, so the thing to understand is that Tylenol is used for pain. You got to get that straight, all right? So you have a apparently deadly drug being used for a non-deadly condition. Now, this is, it's important to understand that this risk apparently is visible in diabetic patients. So what is a diabetic patient? In this case, we're talking type 2 diabetes because they're 80 years old, right? This is not juvenile diabetes. So diabetes is primarily a disease of the liver. The liver is already compromised. And so you add then Tylenol, a medication known to cause liver failure. In fact, the leading cause of liver failure in the United States, or liver transplant, put it that way. And you basically can shut down the liver. That's one way of looking at this information. Now, what happens when you shut down the liver? Well, the liver filters stuff out of the blood. Impurities. Now we know from earlier in the study that these people who take Tylenol tend to have an increase in toxins in their legs, it's peripheral vascular disease, or you can presume also as well their arms because it's their extremities, and they have hypertension, so that would be an increase in impurities in the blood vessels in their central area, but with increased but with continued, well, continued Tylenol use, these people then develop impurities going into their brain and actually causing clots. That's a stroke. So that mechanism, it makes total perfect sense. You don't need to hypothesize a prostaglandin pathway. You don't need to hypothesize any kind of neurochemical blah, blah, blah mechanism. Now, if those of you who like to look under a microscope and get into it, acetaminophen affects, you know, mitochondrial function and metabolism. Supposedly, it does so in pain-causing anti-inflammatory type ways. A lot of mumbo-jumbo, but you can simplify that by saying that supposedly Tylenol affects the metabolism in the mitochondria of parasites, not the mitochondria of humans, which of course I think is a bit of a stretch. In other words, a mitochondria is a mitochondria, has a drug, no difference. But we have here a study showing that stroke is tripled by the use of acetaminophen, Tylenol, Panadol in people who already have diabetes, which is impaired liver function. So type 2 diabetes has just about nothing to do with the pancreas, which is why present methods of treating it have not been successful. That's also another radio show. But the point here is acetaminophen is the worsening factor. Now, in this study, it says, oh, this drug is not a problem for younger people. It's just a problem for the old folks over 80. Oh, here we are. Ouch. Another study. This was sent to your doctor in his mailbox. I don't know if he's reading it. Acetaminophen overdosing is common, especially in cold and flu season. Why? Because certain Vicks preparations, Triminic, Theraflu, Sudafed, Sinutab, all these things are used for cold, contain Tylenol. Robitussin, NyQuil, Formula 44, Feverol, Excedrin, Dristan, Dimetapp, Dayquil, Quercetin, Contac, Cipacol, Benadryl, and Anacin, and Alka-Seltzer Plus, and Actifed. These are all used for colds. And these all contain Tylenol. And people often take many of these at the same time during the same day and during the course of their cold self-treatment and overdose on Tylenol. requiring a liver transplant. And this is your younger population. These people are not in nursing homes. All right, so researchers who asked more than 14,000 adults about their recent use of acetaminophen found significant numbers are exceeding, that means taking more than, the maximum adult daily dose of 4 grams a day, which is 4,000 milligrams, which, by the way, is twice what the study people are taking in the old folks' homes. So the old folks, 80-plus population, were taking 2 grams, which tripled their stroke. These are younger people who are now taking 4 grams, more than 4 grams, which is considered to be an overdose, just by the way. So this PhD and his colleagues found the odds of taking more than 4 grams of Tylenol in a day increased 24% in the cold flu season compared with the off season. So 6.5% during cold and flu season versus 5%. So really 6.5% of people during the flu season who took Tylenol were overdosing themselves. The overdoses were primarily a result of increased use of over-the-counter combination medications meant to treat the cold symptoms. People taking the combination drug may not even know that they contain Tylenol or acetaminophen or Panadol, whatever number name you know it by. So this is really important to realize that people are actually taking this stuff, acetaminophen, and they don't even know they're taking it. Because all they see is, oh, I'm taking Dimetapp. Oh, I'm taking Dayquil. But it's got Tylenol or acetaminophen as an ingredient. So a senior scientific advisor and professor of psychology at University of Pittsburgh, I think they published their findings on March 7th in the British Journal, said the study included 14,000 United States adults who had used Tylenol in the previous month and were sampled from multiple online research panels. This is what happens when you fill out those surveys online. So in other words, if these people are filling out online surveys, that's a pretty high-level functioning group. So these people are probably, they walk, they talk, they dress themselves, and they may actually even be employed. So this is a totally different group of basically healthy people. So this is important to understand that this particular drug, acetaminophen, is having a detrimental effect even among the healthy, high-functioning population. All right. So participants were asked to complete a detailed online daily diary of their medication use for the last 7 days. We're not told the study was about acetaminophen. Researchers found 6% of the acetaminophen users exceeded the maximum dose on at least one day in the week. Moreover, the 4-gram limit was exceeded in 3.7% of the days participants use medicines containing acetaminophen. So now we talk about damage. Damage from overuse. Now, this word overuse is a very nice word. We're really talking about overdose. So researchers suggest more guidance is needed to counsel people on the right dosing of products containing acetaminophen. In high amounts, acetaminophen can cause liver damage. Yes, see, they agree with me. Liver damage. This is the first year-round study that includes detailed data on how consumers use acetaminophen medications, in a news release. The authors note that overuse of medication results in an estimated 112,000 calls a year to poison control centers. This is just from Tylenol, 112,000 calls a year to poison control centers, 59,000 emergency department visits, and 38,000 hospitalizations. That's like way cool. Now, when you read this, you're reading like, we come back, we'll talk more about the real implications of this. No, please don't go.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, I'd like to welcome our Facebook crew here and bring everybody up to speed. What we're talking about here is overcome medication with devastating health effects. So the medical industrial complex itself has done the research. I don't do research. Don't make accusations and state confessions. That use of acetaminophen, also known as Tylenol and Panadol, is tied to tripling the stroke risk in older adults with diabetes. All right, got that. And of course, we would expect that because diabetes is basically a disease of the liver. The liver fails to process the sugar properly, and Tylenol, of course, compromises the liver. So we would expect that people with diabetes would be more compromised by this particular medication. Nevertheless, it is recommended, doctors are instructed to use acetaminophen as the pain control medication of choice in this impaired population. But it does not stop there. So, of course, that study concluded, as always, that there's a need for more research, and don't stop using acetaminophen, aka Tylenol, Panadol. Instead, wait for more research. All right. So while they're instructing the doctors to wait for more research, someone else has done more research. And this is, again, this is another Medscape missive. That means something sent out, a message sent out. And this one mentions that acetaminophen overdosing is common, especially during cold and flu season. So this is affecting a younger population. So now we have a tripling of stroke in the older population of people 80 plus. That study was done in a nursing home. And now this study was done among younger people, people who were online using a computer, participating in an online survey. So this group, we know, walks, talks, dresses themselves, and is at a point in their life they probably need a little bit of money, so they're doing paid research completion. So these are relatively high-functioning individuals. In other words, they're not senile in a nursing home. And even among this population, the Tylenol overdose rate is at least 3%, 3.7%, and that's impressive. And so damage from overuse, now they overdosing, they changed the word overdosing to overuse, again, to kind of just make it a little more mild. And to summarize, the authors are noting that an estimated 112,000 calls a year to poison control centers, 59,000 emergency department visits, and 38,000 hospitalizations. That's a lot of money. Let's do a little bit of math on there. So the average hospitalization in the United States, even if it's just a brief hospitalization, is at least $4,000. That's if they're discharged alive, which is a generous assumption here. But let's take a look and see how much money that might be. So we're looking at $38,000 times $4,000. That's $152 million a year. And that's a low estimate. That's a low ball estimate. Estimates can, hospitalizations can easily exceed $10,000 per hospitalization, in which case we're looking at $500 million a year. When you add up the hospitalizations, $38,000, plus the emergency room visits, $59,000, that's $500 million. Not too shabby for 1 year's work. So this is a lot of revenue being generated by this one particular drug. Make no mistake, these aren't costs. These are revenue. This is income. Someone's getting this money. Now, yes, this money is being paid to hospital employees, the whole emergency department pathway, you know, the medics, the ambulance, the doctors, the nurses, the orderlies. I mean, it's a whole huge industry. It's $500 million. A lot of people say, oh, it's $500 million of profit for the drug company. No. This is why drug companies are so powerful, because they share. So of that $500 million of revenue created, a tremendous amount of individuals profiting throughout the healthcare industry. The question is, really, would society be better served if these individuals were somehow otherwise occupied? In other words, do we really need to have 59,000 emergency department visits, 38,000 hospitalizations, untold deaths, and liver transplants just for the sake of employment, right? Because it's totally avoidable. And, of course, 112,000 calls a year to poison control centers. Folks who work at poison control centers do get paid. So these 112,000 calls a year are definitely keeping people in jobs. This is a major jobs program, but the purpose of the program is you know, tragic. So the average participant was 44 years old. These are people in the prime of their life who, like I said, they're working. They're productive. They're either working a job, they're taking care of their children, taking care of their spouse, taking care of their family. These are active individuals. 61% were women, 24% were non-white, 46% were income below $50,000, and 82% had post-high school education. Now get this. The median income in the United States was $50,000. So 46% reported income below $50,000, which means that 54% of these people had a higher income than the average American. So these are, you know, economically, you know, functioning people. Now, the other thing is the average income, $50,000, some of these people were housewives. Who filled out the survey. Some of these people were maybe college students. So this income, $50,000, is a low estimate. I mean, in other words, the median income for this group that completed the survey was higher than $50,000. We know that because 46% had an income below $50,000. And because of other factors such as a person being a stay-at-home working spouse or being a student, we know that the real income is actually much higher. Okay. So the authors note that the overuse rates represented in the study are from relatively frequent users of Tylenol and do not represent that of the general population. But they suggest more general education around the medication. They add, our findings suggest that public education campaigns might also include some emphasis on cold flu season, addressing the use of upper respiratory medications to treat seasonal respiratory illnesses. Now, this is all well and good. It's really idealistic, but have you ever tried to read the label on any of these cold preparation bottles? The print is super, super small. Now, I've never had a problem reading super small print, but the people I've talked to who use these preparations, I'll say to them, have you read that bottle? And they will actually pick up the bottle, look at it, and they will not be able to read the bottle. Even with their little cheater glasses or, you know, reading glasses, they cannot read the print on those bottles. So that's another thing that needs to be addressed, is that people in this age range, 44 years of age, who even they want to know what's in that bottle, they can't read the fine print, just by the way. I'm shocked myself to find that. So we have Tylenol in the healthy group of 44-year-olds, commonly overdosing. We have Tylenol in the elderly, tripling the stroke risk. What else could there be? Again, from Medscape, acetaminophen, Panadol, Tylenol, use alters sex hormones, may cause birth defects. Holy crap, just when we thought it was okay to go into this... go back in the ocean and swim. So acetaminophen has been linked with the depletion of sex hormones. The findings suggest that fetal exposure to the drug could even be linked with risk of urogenital malformation at birth. What does that mean? That means you can have a male infant with deformed sex organs at birth. Now, this actually, again, not surprising. Why? Because the liver is involved in maintaining proper hormone levels. So when you take a drug like acetaminophen, which blocks the liver functioning, you can expect this kind of thing to happen. Now, another name they use for acetaminophen is paracetamol, which, again, this is another name used in other countries. So acetaminophen, Panadol, Tylenol, paracetamol has been used for over 50 years, and more than half of women take it for pain relief while pregnant. But why would they do that? The doctors recommend it. Yeah, the doctors recommend it. But recent data, including animal model and human epidemiologic studies, suggest it may have some unexpected side effects. The current work identifies depletion of sex hormones as a mechanism for genital malformation at birth in boys. Now, notice, okay, so they're guessing. They don't know how it happened. All they know, take Tylenol, defective male genitalia in the boys. And so they're guessing it's related to sex hormones. However, but the point is, it's not safe for pregnant ladies. A surprising thing we observed in people who were taking acetaminophen was that all of them had a peculiar profile in hormone metabolites. The researchers speculated they might find liver dysfunction with large doses of acetaminophen. Bingo. Because that is normal poisoning. That is, it's normal poisoning. But surprisingly, they found that acetaminophen was associated with changes in certain hormonal metabolites. Again, what these researchers are failing to grasp is that the liver is involved in hormone metabolism. And so this actually is a very logical, accepted variation. So for example, taking of acetaminophen on pregnenolone disulfate was roughly equivalent to the effect of 35 years of aging, or the normal decrease in levels seen in menopause. So taking Tylenol for a pregnant lady threw certain hormones that she had into the menopausal range. That is shocking. And especially when you realize that these ultra-high levels of hormones are necessary to maintain the pregnancy. However, the effect only lasts 2 days. 3 days after you took the acetaminophen, you'll be back to your chronological age. Again, the effect lasts 2 days, so how many of these ladies are taking Tylenol during pregnancy? Maybe a couple of Tylenol a day for a headache in the first or second trimester. Very common. Now, why would a lady take acetaminophen during her pregnancy? Well, of course, for pain, but why not take something else? Answer, her doctor has advised her that Tylenol is her safest option. Yeah. So, nevertheless, given epidemiologists are concerned that people with now have data saying that Tylenol modifies hormones, be cautious until we understand better. So they are exercising caution. Now, caution means is you go ahead and use the drug, but you worry about it while you use it. That's what caution is. So even though acetaminophen is one of the most common pain medications used worldwide, there's a lack of consensus about its mechanism of action. And more recently, growing concern about possible adverse effects on reproductive health. So acetaminophen has also falsely elevated, get this, continuous glucose monitor readings. Again, it's the liver that controls the blood sugar, not the pancreas. So again, when you take acetaminophen, you mildly poison the liver, then you're going to get higher glucose monitor readings. By a large margin in some patients with diabetes, which is a cause for concern as the devices are increasingly being adopted. So acetaminophen is causing elevated glucose monitor readings. In this case, it says falsely elevated, which means people are overdosing themselves on insulin medications. Another problem. Increased mortality source right there. But even if not increased mortality source, increase in people's blood sugars going way too low. And then they have to call the ambulance, get revived. Again, more revenue for the medical industrial complex. So this is actually what we call a pretty good drug. And revenue generator. So they found that 19 of 208 participants were taking Tylenol based on the presence of Tylenol in 7 metabolites. And this use affected a unique subset of hormones, sex hormones. The model was validated in 1,880 individuals of European ancestry in the UK and 1,200 individuals of African American and Hispanic ancestry from the insulin resistance atherosclerosis study. Okay, so now we're tying Tylenol to insulin resistance. In other words, it can make the insulin go two ways, either bottom out the blood sugar or not respond at all. Very interesting. So overall, our analysis of these 3,500 individuals confirmed the generalizable effect of acetaminophen use on sex hormone levels across human populations, they write. So, no matter if you're white, black, or Hispanic, you take Tylenol, your sex hormones basically go to crap. So, the study also sheds light on how acetaminophen may ease pain. People who took acetaminophen, they note, had very low levels of DHEAS. A mechanism that could synergize with acetaminophen's known mode of action in the central nervous system that implicates the cyclooxygenase, valinoid, and endocannabinoid systems. But wait, DHEAS. That's a drug they give guys for low testosterone. So is this Tylenol implicated in the low testosterone situation by interfering with your body's own endogenous testosterone here? That's more information. How cool is that? So now we're creating more revenue for the low T people to prescribe DHEAS, which is an endogenous free testosterone. Way cool. All right, we're going to commercial. We will be back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
And we are talking about our favorite over-the-counter medicine, acetaminophen, a.k.a. Tylenol, a.k.a. Panadol, a.k.a. paracetamol, and what it may or may not, actually what it really is doing to people. This is really totally unfortunate. All right, so Tylenol, Panadol, acetaminophen, you can alter your sex hormones, get some birth defects. Guys, get your low T with this acetaminophen. Overdose, get your liver transplant during flu season. Or if you're elderly, just triple your incidence of stroke. This is amazing. And so a good drug is a drug which, when prescribed, at least triples the revenue. In other words, you prescribe the drug, the person takes it, they actually have to go and get three times the cost of that drug in additional medical therapy to deal with the side effects of that drug. Then, of course, when you get those drugs, they also triple, boom, boom, the cost of revenue to the system. So you take a Tylenol or acetaminophen, and let's say it's $3. I'm going to call it $3. You take $3, now you need $9 of medical care. That $9 creates a situation where you need $27 in medical care, and it's 3 to the n power. And we even know that 2 to the whatever power becomes over $1 million pretty quick. And so now we're taking 3 to the nth power. So 3 times 3 times 3 times 3 times 3 times 3 in perpetuity. So this is what we've got. We've got the ideal drug here. And as we can see, it is doing a darn good job in generating revenue for the medical industrial complex. So, what happened? How did this happen? So, as a doctor, since I went to medical school, practiced medicine for 10 years, I can give you a little bit of insight to this. So, what we didn't talk about is the effect of Tylenol, or effect of these drugs on babies. Babies are people from birth to 5 years of age. So way back when, 1979, year of our Lord, there was something called Reye's syndrome, which was diagnosed in babies after they were vaccinated. So what happened was, you vaccinate the kid, mom gives the kid aspirin and the doctor's direction, of course, and the baby dies of Reye's syndrome. So it's like, oh, no, don't do that. Take Tylenol. So now mothers are advised by their doctors to give the babies Tylenol right after their vaccinations. So Tylenol, of course, shuts down the baby's liver, and now you have a cascade of side effects from Tylenol. And so many people are blaming a lot of issues on vaccines when it's difficult to separate the damage from the vaccine and the damage from the acetaminophen, Panadol, Tylenol that the kid's given at the time of the vaccines. And as if that's not enough, Tylenol comes in two concentrations for children. One concentration is 10 times the other concentration. See where I'm going with this, right? One preparation is an overdose. The other one is bad enough. All right.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations